Republicans have been pushing to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act for a long time.
There have been gazillions of hearings on this subject. When they were in the majority, when we were in the majority.
Republican senators finally unveiled their health care bill, a look at what's in it and what it means for health care. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen every afternoon at 4 on KTOO Juno.
Tonight on 360 North at 8, the Hannah Yoder Band situate their music right in the middle of Americana roots and classic country on Alaska Originals. Well Read is next at 9. At 9:30, Conversations in the Digital Age examines the hacked world order in which the United States has been on both the offense and defense. Mineral explorers share some of their adventures and stories from the road at 10. Tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Oil will keep flowing through the Dakota Access Pipeline for now, but that could change by this fall. After a status hearing Wednesday, a federal judge says he'll make a decision as early as September on whether or not to shut off the pipeline. Daisha Eaton reports.
U.S. District Court Judge James Boasberg's decision on whether to halt oil flow in the controversial pipeline will likely come by September. Both sides will submit written arguments while federal officials work on a more substantial environmental review. Last week, Boasberg ruled the Army Corps of Engineers failed to complete a proper environmental analysis before issuing permits for the pipeline. The ruling says the Army Corps did not adequately consider the possible impacts of an oil spill where the pipeline passes under the Missouri River, the drinking water source for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. In addition, the ruling said the Corps failed to take into account how a spill might affect fishing rights, hunting rights, or environmental justice, or the degree to which the pipeline's effects are likely to be highly controversial. The project led to months of demonstrations near the Standing Rock Reservation in North Dakota last year, and hundreds were arrested. Developer Energy Transfer Partners announced earlier this month that it started shipping oil to customers. The company maintains the 1,200-mile pipeline is safe, but tribes in the Dakotas fear environmental harm and brought the lawsuit with help from nonprofit law firm Earth Justice. There have already been several small spills along the pipeline. For National Native News, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The fate of Native American mascots at four Oregon school districts is being decided. The State Board of Education will review the proposals at their Thursday meeting, as KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
The districts are Rogue River, Philomath, Siletz, and Amity. All have agreements with the Confederated Tribes of the Siletz Indians on making their mascots culturally appropriate and relevant for their region. Cindy Hunt, Government and Legal Affairs Manager for the Oregon Department of Education, says if all four agreements are ratified, there will be eight districts total with tribally approved mascots.
They have enthusiastically invited the tribe in to do professional development of their staff, do speeches to assemblies, and really talk about the history of the Native peoples who lived in their school districts. To characterize the agreements as just mascot agreements is really not describing the breadth of these agreements.
There were 15 districts with Indian mascots in 2012 when the legislature approved a resolution requiring a local tribe's involvement. Hunt says only three have not officially told education officials what they're planning. Schools not in compliance risk losing state funding if they have not acted by July 1st. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull in Eugene, Oregon.
Federal officials recently apologized for their role in the World War II internment of Unungan people. Jim Kurth, acting director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, traveled to St. Paul Island to speak with survivors and descendants.
As much as we wish, we cannot take back the course of history. But what we can do now is heal together.
Fish and wildlife agents oversaw the internment of the people of the Pribilof Islands. They were sent to camps in southeast Alaska, where many perished due to illness and starvation after the Japanese bombed Dutch Harbor in 1942. Nearly 900 Alaska Native people were evacuated from the Aleutian and Pribilof Islands. U.S. New Mexico Senator Martin Heinrich reintroduced a bill Wednesday to prohibit the export of sacred Native American items and increase penalties. The Safeguard Tribal Objects of Patrimony, or STOP Act, was originally introduced in 2016. A field hearing on the bill was held last year in Albuquerque. New Mexico tribes are among those in support of the legislation, as many work to bring sacred items home. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Welcome to the Thursday, June 22nd edition of Juneau Afternoon, coming at you live from Alaska's capital city, specifically the KTOO studios. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of Juneau Afternoon. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. And right now, the weather is spacious. My screen says scattered rain showers, but if you look out the window, it looks like a fabulous summer day, and it is the first day of summer, and maybe solstice, was that yesterday, was that today, that's the whole question. But anyway, it looks like it's going to be sunny tonight and tomorrow, and then partly cloudy tomorrow night, and chance of rain high in the mid-60s. So it should be glorious for maybe the next 24 hours, and we'll take it. In the studio with Jeff and I, we start every Thursday with representatives of UAS and their many, many partners throughout Southeast. Yeah. And in the studio with us, we have Colleen James and Lyle James. Colleen is the NRC coordinator for UAS, and Lyle is the Gold Belt Heritage Institute Education Project coordinator. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So what's going on campus?
Right. Yeah, so it's summer. Summer, I see it down here. I think I drove through the scattered rain showers getting here from campus. So I saw it on the highway.
All 10 miles.
Yeah, but it's beautiful to look out your window. It's gorgeous. The summer time at UAS is hopping. We have, in addition to our UAS students attending their summer session, we have middle school and high school culture camps and academies with our community partners, Sea Alaska Heritage Institute and Gold Belt Heritage Institute. Gold Belt Heritage Foundation.
Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Finished their two middle school camps on our campus, and both camps had 36 students each. Sea Alaska's camp had students from all over Southeast, and Gold Belt as well, so wonderful energy. We also had some special guests from Hawaii, from Molokai, come and tour our campus. Just beautiful students, just culturally immersed and sharing their culture with our campus. We've got some guests coming up from Oahu, and Lyle will talk about that in just a moment. So it's pretty exciting. Lots of good energy, you know. I mean, we've got all of our regular traditional classes that we hold in the summertime, but it's so nice to see all these young, energetic faces. Anyway, I'll turn it over to Lyle to talk about some of the camps.
That'd be great. I have some questions, of course. But Lyle could answer them. So tell us all a little bit about the middle and high school camps, culture camps and academies that did they just end, or are they starting up?
We had our middle school that just ended last weekend, and we had worked with up to 40 middle school students. The first half of the academy, we were out at the university, staying in the freshman dorms. This is the first time as Gold Belt Heritage Foundation that we hosted an overnight academy for middle school students. It was an exciting time. The first half, we did academic of digital storytelling for the students. We had Ray Imel from Dunkahini Middle School. We had Joseph Marks, who was language lead, and they both did a wonderful job with these students. And at the end of the academy, they collaborated together to immerse the students in sharing a story that Joseph Marx's father, Paul Marx, worked on documenting. And at the end, they did a presentation showing all the work that they did throughout this whole academy. So the first week, that's what they did. The second week, they continued that project out at the Methodist camp, where they started learning how to preserve our traditional foods.
Oh, wow. That sounds great. That sounds great. And 40 kids from around the region and beyond, correct?
Yes.
Yes. That sounds wonderful.
I believe we had maybe 5 students from out of town. And, they survived.
And so did you.
And so did we.
2 weeks. You had some middle school educators there, so they were where I'm also known as the tech guy at the
UAS. Yeah, we have UAS alumni actually working with us.
Oh, cool.
So these are teachers that are about to go in the school district and teach our students, so it's seems fitting to have them come to our academies to get familiar with the students now.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds great. You have the pros, the newbies, the yes. subject matter experts. It's so great. So what's the high school academy like, and when does that start?
That starts this Sunday.
Oh, whoa.
At noon. Mm-hmm. We have 40 students already signed up for this academy. This will be the first time that we've actually worked with the university on trying to get a science credit for the students.
Oh, cool.
And it'll be offered through the Sitka campus. That's where the instructor's originally from. Mm-hmm. And they will be taking a fishery technician 110 course. And this summer, they will be putting in at least 84 hours out of their 164 hours that they need to complete the science credit.
Wow. So that's a 2 week?
This will be a 2 week one, and this is where they put in their 82 plus hours.
Wow. That's a lot of hours.
It's a lot of hours.
Fishery technician, what does that entail?
If I was a biologist, I'd be able to answer that a little better.
So let's say fishing 101 to 405 in a
pretty
crash
much.
Course.
Yeah. It'll be great because they're working with the elders here in the community.
Oh, yeah.
Three in particular, John Martin Sr., Ben Jackson, and George Davis. They're all well-versed in marine science.
Oh, that sounds great. That sounds great. Wow, that sounds amazing. Are there any room left if people are listening? Are there any spaces, or is it done for the summer? Can you take a few more high school kids, or is 40?
I think we can squeeze in a couple more.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so if people are listening and they're interested, where can they find out more?
What they can do is they can go to the Gold Belt Heritage Foundation website and click on events and camps, and you can scroll down and you'll find the high school academy, and you'll find the registration and application for both Gold Belt Heritage Foundation and the university. Both will be needed along with a high school transcript.
Okay. And it's for all high school students?
For all high school students,
okay.
Yes.
9 through 12?
Yes.
Okay. Wow, that's really exciting. And are both these camps in new forms this year? Like they may be around, have been around, but is this the first time they're residential and that length and so on and so forth?
These camps have been around for quite a while, and we're slowly trying different things out and seeing what helps keep our students interested in things that help them advance or keep engaged.
That sounds great. That sounds great. Wow. Well, thank you for both of you for all that you do. Colleen, anything else going on at the university? I mean, that's a lot right there. That's a great partnership.
Yeah, there's, you know what? No, that for right now, we have a lot of our, like Lyle mentioned, we have alumni, you know, working at the camps. We also have current students chaperoning at the camp. So it's kind of cool. UAS has a presence in the camps, and families are always welcome to check out the camp. So it's nice to see parents, aunties, uncles, grandparents walking around our campus. checking out possibilities, maybe coming back to school. I did want to say that I know, not related to UAS, that I know Lyle's got one more camp coming up for the grade schoolers.
Yes, there is an elementary camp that Victoria Johnson is in charge of, and I believe her goal is to reach 50. I know in the past we've worked with up to 100 students in that academy or that camp.
Wow.
And it's the kids always walk away with a great experience and wanting it to not end.
Oh, wow.
So
when does that camp start?
That camp will be July 17th to July 29th.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that application is also online,
right,
at Gold Belt Heritage Foundation.
Under events and camps.
Open to the community.
Yeah.
These are just really great opportunities. I just wanted to say that UAS is super excited to have the collaboration, having these community organizations come on campus and enjoy our campus with such a beautiful space. So we're honored, excited, and it's refreshing because it gets quiet for about a week once the spring semester ends. There's about a week of quietness, and we feel the shock of all of our students who've graduated, and then we get refreshed, I think, by seeing all these young faces running around campus doing some really cool things with our faculty and teachers from around Juneau. So anyway,
yeah,
thank
that
you.
That sounds great. All right, well, if you need more information, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation.
GoldBeltHeritageFoundation.org.
Right. And then UAS, always online and
yep,
ready with lots of information. Thank you both for everything you do for our community.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 22nd of June, 2017. It's the birthday of the novelist Erich Maria Remarque, born in Osnabrück, Germany, 1898, author of the novel All Quiet on the Western Front, describing trench warfare in World War I, told by a young man who says, "I am young, I am 20 years old, yet I know nothing of life but despair, death, fear, and fatuous superficiality cast over an abyss of shadow." It's the birthday of the director and screenwriter Billy Wilder, born in Vienna, 1906. He was a reporter in Berlin, eventually found work as a scriptwriter, more than a dozen German films. He was Jewish, and so when Hitler arrived, Billy Wilder left. Arrived in Hollywood, 1934, with $11 in his pocket. His big break came when Paramount Studios put him together with the writer Charles Brackett, and together they wrote Nanochka, and The Lost Weekend, and Sunset Boulevard. And then he paired up with I.A.L. Diamond and wrote Love in the Afternoon, The Apartment, The Fortune Cookie, and other movies. He directed Marilyn Monroe in The Seven-Year Itch and Some Like It Hot. Billy Wilder said, "An audience is never wrong. An individual member of it may be an imbecile, but 1,000 imbeciles together in the dark, that is critical genius." It's the birthday of Meryl Streep, born in Summit, New Jersey, 1949, went off to Vassar. One of her earliest auditions for a film role was for Dino De Laurentiis' King Kong. Laurentiis said to his son in Italian, looking at Meryl Streep, "This is so ugly. Why did you bring me this?" And Streep, who understood Italian, said, "I'm very sorry that I'm not as beautiful as I should be, but, you know, this is it. This is what you get." Her first big break was the role of Robert De Niro's girlfriend in The Deer Hunter, 1978. And it's the birthday of Senator Elizabeth Warren, born in Oklahoma City, 1949. Her mother worked at Sears. Her father was a maintenance man. He died of a massive heart attack when she was 12 years old. Family lost their car, and she went to work at her aunt's Mexican restaurant to help support the family. Elizabeth Warren, author of the book The Fragile middle-class Americans in debt, and also the two-income trap, why middle-class mothers and fathers are going broke. Here's a poem for today by Irene Blair Honeycutt entitled Blessing. May time grant you the lasting memory of the summer night on Jonas Ridge when we were walking the dogs, late, the white rail fence, our guide. When we turned back toward the cabin, darkness pressed against our faces, and a host of fireflies flashed in the mist settling on the fields, blinking green from another realm, lighting the divide between road and weeds. The dogs looked up frenzied, katydids took a rest, following the tiny globes we felt our way to the gravel hill that sloped toward the yellow glow of lamplight from the cabin windows. Blessing, a poem by Irene Blair Honeycutt from Beneath the Bamboo Sky, published by Main Street Rag Publishing Company, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Magoosh, online test prep for the ACT, SAT, GMAT, GRE, LSAT, and MCAT. Prep smart, go far, and enjoy the ride at magoosh.com. And by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from Landscape Alaska, providing complete landscape services and Alaskan hardy plants from the new nursery on Back Loop Road and on the web at landscapealaska.com. This year, offering selected fruit trees and organic vegetable starts.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's 20 minutes past the hour. The current temperature is 60 degrees, gloriously sunny downtown, and will remain so, supposedly, until tomorrow night when it gets partly cloudy. In the studio with Jeff and I, Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Partis. Your Thursday host is Sheila Kelly and Brian Crowder. They're here representing Perseverance Theater, we could say. Sheila is the author of a book called Tugwell Gold, an Alaskan
Saga of Riches and Ruin.
I like the way you say that. It was published in 2010 by the University of Alaska Press, and it has been converted into a play that Perseverance is premiering, starting tonight, I believe, previews tonight, and Brian Crowder is one of the actors in the show. So welcome to our show, both of you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, Sheila, you have a direct connection to Treadwell. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I do. Like, who's ever heard of Treadwell down in, you know, Spokane, Washington, which is where I grew up? But I had, because my father was born and raised there. 1899, he was born. He lived there until 1920-something. He and his father was a machinist with the Treadwell mine. And so my father and my two aunts were born and raised, and I heard stories about Treadwell, and they were fascinating, even from a far distance. I have never lived in Alaska, and I started collecting stories and excitement, and first I was going to do a family memoir, then I wanted to do a story of the town, company town, then I thought I needed to know about gold mining, and then about Alaska history, because this was going on then, so I got really pulled in and fascinated and ended up with a book some years later.
Wow, and now that book has been converted into a play.
Yes.
How's that experience been for you as an author?
Well, interesting. That whole thing about takes a whole different set of skills and all to go from the page to the stage. As a nonfiction book writer, you know what you pay attention to and the density of the prose or the narrative and all of that. Very different when I hand it over to Rachel, who has to make dialogue out of it all. Everything has to be through dialogue. So that's a very different kind of skill. And so I watched that taking place. It also gets at a different part of the story. So I am thrilled that she did this and that Perseverance Theater has taken it on. it has a different kind of life. The story of Treadwell now has a different kind of life. And I have to say that way back when I was writing the book, 2009, I sent one of my early copies to Jeff Brown here to review. And he came, the comments that came back said, "Oh, it reads like a screenplay. When will the movie come out?"
Play first.
Exactly. So I'm waiting. Oh, yeah, next step. But so I'm thrilled to have it in another form.
Oh, that sounds great. Before we talk a little bit more about the play, where have you gone to where your family lived in Douglas? Where did they live?
They lived in Treadwell. They a cottage that would be up on kind of the bluff behind where the, you know, the foundations of the 300 mill.
Mm-hmm.
I, in fact, looked at maps, old maps, and I think I figured out where they were. And I climbed up in the brush and sort of sat in that place and looked out and tried to see if I could feel the energies of my family. But they lived in a cottage, a four-bedroom cottage, because my grandfather was a machinist and had three children, and his mother-in-law was living with him. So they were there, again, from 1899 to 1925. I mean, that was through, my family was there through the cave-in and up to that final 1926 fire that destroyed everything. So they went through the cave-in, but my grandfather's work as a machinist could still serve the Ready Bullion mine that was left, one of the four that was left surviving after the flood. And then the other mines, there was things going on, the Juneau, Alaska Juneau, and the shipping, all kinds of other industries. So the Kelly family rode through the boom and the bust.
Wow. So are you saying that the Treadwell community, when you say Treadwell, is that the whole Sandy Beach area that we think of, the trails behind Sandy Beach?
Well, the
Treadwell. So the actual cottages were back there?
Yes,
too?
Yes. It was a town of about 2,000. And there were families. So I figured that there were 1,000 workers that were in the mine, and then their families and all. So Treadwell had a population of 2,000.
But it wasn't necessarily what we call Douglas now. It's kind of beyond.
No, it was absolutely separate from Douglas. It was a company town. There was a border. I mean, there was a line. In fact, I think the street is even called Treadwell now. Mm-hmm. So there's a street that divides Treadwell from Douglas. In fact, the story was that Treadwell, as a company town, there were no churches, there were no brothels, there were no bars, there were no fraternal organizations, and all that, that in order to do your sinning or your praying, you had to sort of go about three blocks south to be in the border of this town of Douglas, because it was a separate town, it wasn't the company town, and you could do those things there.
Going to the bad town. Going to the bad town. And we all know the proximity, but okay, that's far. If you're just joining us, that's Sheila Kelly talking. She's the author of the book Treadwell Gold, which is the material that the new play is based on,
yes,
which is really exciting. So before we go to Brian and we talk about the production, what's your big takeaway? So you did this whole nonfiction look at your family's history, but more than that, you know, that was the hook into
right.
it because you had family. So what do you think about the gold fever? What was your takeaway?
Well, that was interesting. I mean, that way back, I mean, of course, this was 1899, and always say that the Klondike gold rush, which everybody makes a fuss about, was actually only 1897 to 1899. Treadwell went from like 1882 to 1922, made a lot more money. There was a lot more wealth involved in the Treadwell. So one thing that I learned about was this hard rock gold mining, which is different from placer. It was very significant in opening up Alaska. Some things in doing my research, I wanted to write a story about the Kellys of Treadwell. I thought that would just be so charming, you know, of all my... Couldn't find enough about that. So that's why I ended up researching other families and the town and gold mining and all. And I guess my takeaway would be, one, Treadwell was a big deal. I mean, the fact that at the turn of the century, you know, early 1900 and all, around there, this was the largest gold mining operation in the world. And so Treadwell was not just the story of my family. It really was the story of a town, of a business or the gold mining, hard rock gold mining, and it was part of Alaska. It opened up Alaska. It was a model of the kind of development that happened later where you had resources and then you had a town, you built a town, and it was good living for people there. And that, the other part of it, besides it being a big deal, was life was really good there. When my aunts talked about gracious living there. Now, you say, kind of, you're asking what my take on it. I am an environmentalist by profession and by passion. So it was, and people thought, oh, I'm going to write this and that I'm going to talk about exploitation of resources and exploitation of labor and all. The fact was, I found that that went on to some extent. I had to stop myself from sort of romanticizing it all because the way it was described to me, the good life and all that it did for the region and actually the country. So that was a challenge for me, but I err on the side of it was a big deal and it was a great life.
It's so interesting. One more question for you, maybe more. One right now. So Klondike is really well known. Like Klondike, you mentioned the Klondike to people from the lower 48. They're like, oh yeah, the gold rush, you know? Why not Treadwell?
Good question.
Was it because access? But then
no,
you know,
actually,
like,
there was more access.
Naive was not really like, oh, really easy to get to.
No, in fact, one of the reasons that Treadwell ended up successful another because there was such easy access and transportation on the water. It was more complicated. I mean, it was really technology and the science of mining low-grade ore. So, I mean, not very sexy, you know, and it took a lot of technology and people and machinery.
So you just couldn't go with a pick and strike it rich.
No.
You needed to be part of this organization.
Yes, it was corporation.
So
and
it was more, it wasn't the individual lust for gold, you know, or
it was wages. These miners made good wages, but then they could be described as wage slaves, right, by those who wanted to go up and strike it.
Six days a week, Sundays off, July 4th and Christmas, right?
Exactly, yes, yes. So that was why, and that's how I start out my book, or in the beginning, with who's ever heard of Treadwell? You know, you say gold mining in Alaska, and everybody thinks the Klondike. So this is another kind of gold rush and another kind of prospector is how I pitched it.
Okay, and then one more, and then we're going to get to the play, because I'm kind of really intrigued. So what do you think about the remains of Treadwell?
Well, I hope that the efforts and the commitment and the passion to continue restoring and preserving them goes on. And there are people here, as people you talk to from the Treadwell Restoration and Preservation Society, who are committed to doing that. So this is such a wonderful and fascinating piece of history, certainly your local history. I would hope that the few ruins that it's fascinating to walk through even and see the ruins in the jungle there. You feel like you're in the Maya jungle here where there's foundations and all of that. But the one building that remained after the fire in 1926, the new office building, the fact that now that is being preserved, kind of restored so it could be a picnic shelter and an exhibit area, and maybe bringing some of the machinery out from the bushes out so there'd be kind of a museum there. It's fascinating, it's important, and it is the heart and beginning of this region, and I hope that, you know, the excitement and commitment continues.
Oh, that's great. Well, if you're just joining us, Sheila Kelly, the author of Treadwell Gold, which has been transformed into a play at Perseverance, and Brian Crowder's here. He plays one of the characters. I'm going to go back to Sheila, and then we're going to get to Brian. So you wrote a nonfiction
book piece. Yes.
And now it's a play, so
yes.
It has to be character-driven.
Yes.
So
yes.
Here we go, Brian. Tell us about your experience with the play and the characters, and tell us a little bit about the character you play.
Yeah, absolutely. I play George Barnett, who is a young geologist and engineer who comes up from Seattle, where he's just kind of finished up his training and his studies, and he's been sent off to fix Treadwell's problems, kind of trying to figure out how we can keep these mines, how can we can support the pillars, the structure itself, to continue mining and mine the deeper levels. And so I'm kind of sent in with this task right away to figure out how we can get, well, I want to go to the deeper levels, but my boss wants to take the ore from these upper pillars near the surface, which is a very dangerous thing to do, and I try and explain that to him. But I think I might come up with I think I have this plan that can kind of get around the concerns of the support systems in the mines, in the shafts. And so it kind of revolves around me coming up with this idea, and also the Bergman family, who I there's a little romance, a little stage romance, and a baby comes out real quickly. I won't say any more. And so it's
very sweet.
Yeah, and it takes place over the course of a year. His first day coming off the boat, seeing the town for the first time, meeting these people who work here at the mine, and kind of finding himself becoming more and more enmeshed with this the company, and becoming whether or not he starts dealing with this line of whether or not he wants to be a company man, or whether or not he wants to be a family man, or if he's doing the right thing by the people who work here and put themselves and their lives in danger.
Okay, so it's all through George's eyes. He's the stranger in the strange land looking at...
He's definitely kind of the through line that kind of drives drives a lot of the momentum of the play.
Yeah.
But the Bergman family is also very important, and you get to see a lot of this sort of familial... Because I'm kind of this, like... young guy coming up from the lower 48s and trying to discover myself, and all of a sudden I'm kind of in this strange town with this beautiful girl that I fall in love with, and I'm all of a sudden part of this family, not just the family that I'm coming into because of we have a child that we have in common, but also just the company itself and the people that work there, and all these relationships that are touched on throughout the play. And so it's a really fun journey, and it all culminates with a big scene in the end. I don't want to put any spoilers. Come watch the show. Come see the show.
No spoilers here. That is fun. So what is the logistics? When does the play...
Well, we have our first preview tonight, which is a pay-as-you-can, and then we open tomorrow night, June 23rd, and we run through Sunday. Sunday will be a matinee, and then we'll pick back up on Thursday again, next Thursday the 29th, and we'll run through Sunday, but then we'll also have a special performance on Monday, July 3rd. So right after the show, you come watch the show, see this historic play about Treadwell, and right afterwards, not 2 hours later, there's going to be fireworks, you know, shooting off across the channel. So a real fun special performance that we're get the chance to actually offer to the public. So it's great.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
That sounds great. So, Sheila, you've seen the play?
No.
Ooh.
No, in fact, I'm waiting. I did came up for a read-through back in October, and then I have purposely sort of stayed away. And I even asked Rachel, the adapter, who's been doing wonderful work, about how this certain thing was handled. She said, oh, I'm not going to tell you. You have to come see how it. I was really interested how production values would deal with some very difficult kind of setups on the stage. So I can't wait. I haven't seen it.
Excellent. Excellent. Brian, you have anything else you want to add about the production?
Oh, I just want to thank everybody that's been involved, and Sheila here, and Rachel, and Art, who directed it, the design team. We have a lot of great actors, a lot of great local actors, and people who came in from out of town. We've got Christina Apathy, Boston Christopher, Tom Robinault, James Sullivan, Rebecca Hassler, Callahan Croteau, Hunter Hill. And please forgive me if I'm missing anybody. I think that's just about everybody. So it's been a great process so far. A little bit of a truncated process, but that's made it more exciting. So it's been great, and we look forward to seeing everybody out there this weekend and or next weekend.
Sounds great. Thank you both for coming.
Thank you for
Thank
having
you.
Us.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
This is Bird Note. Each spring and summer, indigo buntings sing their buzzy, jumbled songs from brushy edges throughout the eastern U.S. The sparkling blue males are one of the best-known and most colorful birds of the region. West of the Rockies, a different bunting, a lazuli bunting, sings his song. He's named for the gemstone lapis lazuli, and his head and back shimmer in iridescent azure. Together with a red-orange breast and bold white wing patches, he looks like he might have been fashioned by a maker of Navajo jewelry. Yet another bunting sings atop thickets and shrubs in the southeast and south-central U.S. And if the first two buntings, indigo and lazuli, are avian gems, many would equate this third bunting, the painted bunting, with the crown jewels. A male-painted bunting, with a bold blue head, ruby-red breast, and a back of burnished apple green, is one of the most dramatically colorful birds you'll see in all of North America. Enjoy the bunting singing in your neck of the woods this summer, for with the arrival of fall, indigo, lazuli, and painted too, will be gone to the tropics until next spring. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
If you don't like going to the dentist, it's probably because it was a bad experience for you as a child. Times have changed. The board-certified pediatric dentist at the New Search Children's Dental Clinic will explain things in a way your child understands and provide fun distractions. Kids will actually want to go to the dentist and want to take care of their teeth throughout their lives. The New Children's Dental Clinic at Search is proud to offer pediatric dental services to all Juno's kids. To make an appointment for your child, call 789-KIDS.
You are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. It's 20 minutes past the hour. It's June 22nd, and it's summer in Alaska, and it's summer in Juno. It's 60 degrees outside. It's beautiful downtown, and summer means only one thing. Only fools run at midnight. And here we are with Laird Jones and Will Cronick from Clinging at Heider to tell us about this year's event. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So when is it going to be?
June 24th, 11:59 p.m., Saturday night.
All right. And tell us all the details. How do people sign up? And it's crazy costume time, right?
Well, pre-registration closes tonight, but then you can register at the event at 10:30 when the doors open on Saturday.
And where did the doors open?
Elizabeth Pravich Hall at the Andrew Hope Building,
excellent.
320 West Willoughby.
Mm-hmm. Formerly known as the A&B Hall.
Right.
If you're an old-timer, sometimes you have a hard time shifting names.
That's right.
But it's recently redone, and it's fabulous looking. Wow, what a space. So that's 10:30, you get there, and so you could pre-register or you could register at the door.
Correct.
And you could register as an individual or as a group? Is that how it works?
Correct. And we'll be doing costume contests starting at 11 o'clock. And so you can enter those costume contests either as a group, which we're calling a centipede, or as individuals.
What are you calling it?
Centipede.
Yeah.
When you're dressing up as a theme, for instance, last year I was the bridesmaid, and that was our theme.
Okay. Kind of groups five or more that are registered.
Centipede, got it. Okay, and how much does it cost?
$20 per individual. And the money's going towards the Klinkenheide's alumni scholarship program.
Excellent. And what's the route? Is it the same route every year?
Mm-hmm. Same
yes.
route.
Okay. So you want to talk about it?
Sure. We'll be leaving from Elizabeth Paranovich Hall and then going down Glacier Avenue and then going through the Highlands neighborhood and then coming back Glacier Avenue.
And how long does it take people usually?
Well, if you're doing the 5K, if you're really fast, you could probably do it in about 20 minutes. But some people walk it, so that might take about an hour. And then there's also a one-mile fun walk.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, if you're walking pretty fast, you can do a mile in about, 15 minutes. But it could take longer, depending on, I guess, how much fun you're having.
Yeah. It's usually wrapped up, in
one-ish.
Yeah.
1:30-ish.
One-ish. It might be a little dark by then.
Yeah.
It is a little dark, usually by then, just a little.
Right.
So where can people pre-register?
The pre-registration, they can do it at the Alaska Clubs, both downtown and Valley, the Pavitt Health and Fitness Club, Nugget Alaskan Outfitters, or NAO, Heritage Bookstore, both of downtown and Valley, and the VTRC at Hospital Drive, or at the Sacred Grounds Cafe that's in the Andrew Hope Building. And the cafe is going to be open that night also.
Excellent. That's a good idea.
Yeah. And so we're watching the costume contest. You can get amped up on some coffee. We'll have music you can dance to. Just a good way to get excited for this fun race.
Yeah, exactly. Great way to kick off the official summer, you know.
Right.
Even though for us we've had summer for a couple of months now. Might actually be on the waiting, but we don't want to talk about that. That sounds great. Okay, anything else our listeners should know?
It's a fun family event. Come one, come all.
Raises funds for a good cause
for college, for pay for expensive colleges.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks for organizing it this year and all that you do. And so doors open 10:30.
Yeah.
Yep.
Be there. Costume contest at 11.
Yeah, and then snacks,
big party.
Oh, yes.
Big party and then race at 11:59.
Right. Race, walk, stroll.
Race, walk, stroll.
Yeah. It's not a race. It's a fun run.
Exactly. Right. There you go. All right. Well, thanks for dropping by today. That sounds great.
Great.
Only Fools Run at Midnight. Iconic Juno event this Saturday. Check it out.
All right. Thank you.
Right, thank you.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with Arts Up.
Are you one of the 120,000 Alaskans with some college but no degree? The Finish College Alaska Initiative from the University of Alaska Southeast can help you complete your degree with flexible online learning options, a personalized degree plan, and support on how to fit college into your life. UAS is now offering a 3-credit tuition waiver to eligible applicants. You already work hard. Get rewarded for it. Let's finish that degree together. Call 888-550-6177 or visit finishcollege.alaska.edu to learn more.
This is Sarah Raster from the Year of Kindness Steering Committee. As part of 17YOK, all sorts of groups are adopting specific weeks during which they do something to help spread kindness. This week's group is Juneau Glacier Valley Rotary. You can sign up for a week by emailing 17YOK@JuneauPolice.com. Together, we can make Juneau a better place to live.
Support comes from Admiralty Environmental, a Juneau-based firm offering environmental sampling, laboratory testing services, and project management. Admiralty Environmental. More information at 463-4415 or admiraltyenvironmental.com.
Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. We have one more guest before we go to Arts Up with Nancy DeCherney. We have Saffron Hayes. He's a filmmaker, and he's got a film that we're going to be able to see this Sunday and on the 1st about his trips to India, Nepal, and different parts of Alaska. Is that true, Saffron?
Yes, on the 25th and on the 1st.
Okay, what's the name of the film?
Culture Shock. And it's a film about my travel experiences through India, Nepal, and Alaska. And I've created the film back in 2003, so this will be kind of the second time I'm debuting it here at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater. And but this time, there's going to be a workshop afterwards and discussion and an art sale.
What kind of workshop?
So the workshop is going to be on yoga and tai chi and meditation, and we're going to be focusing on awakening your kundalini energy, and so just working with your energies and helping them flow better. And I'm hoping the film will be a good way to start the workshop. And looking at how you can use your energy, negative energy, and then turn it into a positive energy.
Wow, that sounds great. Yeah. That sounds great. What's the name of the film again?
Culture Shock.
Culture Shock. And the dates?
So it's on the 25th this Sunday, and then the following Sunday on the 1st.
Okay. And people could find out information on the Goldtown website, maybe?
Yep, on the Goldtown website. And then after the film, we'll be walking over to the Jack, Juneau Arts and Humanities Center, to do the workshop. So you can also find out information on the Jack website. I also have information on my website, manifestrealityproductions.com. You can find out more about what we'll be talking about and the schedule.
That sounds good. Is this your first film, or have you done others?
This is my first 33-minute long film. But it's been a lifelong production. So I started the film when I was 18 years old, when I kind of first left here in Juneau and went to India. And back then I didn't really have a vision of what the film was going to be like when it was going to be finished. So when I came back, a lot of it was trying to figure out what the story was of the film. And so in 2003, right up to the very hour I debuted the film, I was still editing it. And but now it's done. And I want to, after watching the first screening of the film and kind of getting feedback and thinking about it, I want to do the film again, but with kind of a different context and a story ahead of time, and then and real discussion afterwards.
That sounds great. Well, Safran, thanks so much for coming in today. So the film is the 25th and the 1st. You can find out more at the Jack website or at the Goldtown Nick website. And check it out. Film, workshop, training, discussion. Sounds great. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break. We're going to bring Nancy DeJourney in.
Support comes from Southeast Living Magazine, Southeast Alaska's home, real estate, and lifestyle magazine. Working to reach potential home buyers and featuring articles and tips on home improvement. Available at locations throughout Southeast. More at seakliving.com.
Hi, this is Derek Lale, event supervisor at Centennial Hall with CBJ Parks and Recreation. Our team and I are looking forward to planning your event at Centennial Hall, Juneau's convention center located in the heart of downtown's Willoughby District. We offer a variety of equipment for rent, technical support, and room setup, and work with caterers to assist you in making your vision for the event come true. For more information, call 586-5283 or visit our website, centennialhall.net.
Let's go. It is 11 minutes to the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on June 22nd. It is 60 degrees at the airport and downtown, a little colder in the Mendenhall Valley, and it is supposed to stay sunny until tomorrow night, where it's partly cloudy, and then there's a chance of rain, haha, on Saturday. We snicker at chances of rain. Nancy DeCherney is here. She is the executive director of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council and her mighty staff of six. And what is going on? You've got a party tomorrow night.
We have a party tomorrow night, and it's going to be outdoors because it's going to be sunny, like you just said.
Woohoo! Who's playing?
So it's Fire on McGinnis. Oh, they'll be out here on the plaza.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, we've got... It's our farmers market day.
Ooh.
So Panhandle Produce will be there, Homesteaders Cash, Branching Threads, Grace's Fashion Design, Scentsy, Mac Shack. Our food trucks will be open. There'll be a beer garden. We'll have flowers from Miss Scarlett's. There's going to be all kinds of popcorn, party on.
Party
and it's a block
Juno
party.
Style. Sounds great.
Yeah. Thank goodness the weather's finally.
Yeah, I think this is the first one you could do outside. So it's
going to be
the first. You got to do it. It's outside.
Everybody needs to come on down.
Exactly.
Come
to the APK
down.
Or the Slam, the State Museum, whatever you call it.
Yes, whatever you want to call it. They would like you to call it the APK.
They would.
Okay, so other things we have going on. There's a preview performance of the Treadwell Gold tonight.
We talked to the author of the book and one of the actors just before.
Perfect.
It fabulous. It runs for a couple of weekends.
Mm-hmm. We have also, let's see, over at Alaska Fish and Chips, after you get done at the block party, you can go over and have cornhole night. The Friday Night Live over there, and I don't know who's playing over there, but then you could go see the opening night for Treadwell Gold is Friday night. There's a low tide walk early Saturday morning out at Bridget Creek Outlet Cove, 36.5 mile. Who knew we went out that far, huh? And then on Saturday is the Wish Canadier Summer Showcase. It's at Rockwell. Have you had somebody in to talk about that?
No, we have not yet. Maybe they're coming tomorrow.
I don't know. They have an evening of poetry and music as well as the recitations and music by Jacob Picard. Tickets are $25. You get little tables. There's all kinds of wonderful things going on. That's from 7 to 9 at Rockwell and Cornhole Saturdays. From 6 to 10 at the Fish and Chips, Running with Pretty Sharp Things.
Aaron Elmore's play.
Yes, which I think he maybe wrote, and it's all about swordplay.
He wrote,
everything.
He directed, he's in it, and it's supposed to be really funny. I haven't seen it yet. That's over at McPheeters Hall, right?
Yes, 7:30 on Saturday. There's Club Baby Seal. There's a lot of theater stuff to do, for heaven's sake.
What is Club Baby Seal?
Club Baby Seal, I think, is improv stand-up comedy with Alicia Hughes-Scandus, Nathaniel Williams, Allison Holtkamp, and Kirsa Hughes-Scandus, and MC Miguel Rohrbacher. So there's all sorts of new faces and new material, and that is happening at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. at 8:30 on Saturday night. And Only Fools Run at Midnight, you were just speaking about. So all you fools should get out here.
Absolutely.
Fun. It's probably going to be a relatively nice evening.
Yeah, no. It should be fun.
And then let's see, we've got on Sunday, Sacred Harp, which is an American art form. Sing American a cappella music with your friends and neighbors. No experience needed. And this is from 2 to 3:30 at Holy Trinity on Sunday. It's a really nice thing. You know, singing is really healthy for you.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah. So even if you can't
sing,
they
want
you.
Might be healthy for me, but not very
healthy. Just turn your hearing aids off. It'll be fine. Ultimate Frisbee from 3 to 5 at Thunder Mountain High School. So every Sunday through the end of July, go out and play that. There's a monthly community Hue song at the Public Library, Munden Hall. Treadwell Gold at 4 p.m. at Perseverance, and Juno Cabaret on Sunday at 7 p.m. This is at Rockwell. As always, the show is pay as you can. I don't have the list of singers in my head, but they always have great singers. Do we have that here?
No, we
have the poster, but it doesn't say who's singing.
I know that Heather and Cole, I think Courtney Nelson is singing.
Yeah, okay.
I think
they always have a great selection.
I think they have the variety of, I think Eve singing, Eve Dellingham. I think it's a little variety of the old and a few new faces, too.
Monday, we have the free tours of the House of Wickersham. I think this is going on all summer. Through Sunday through Thursday from 10 to 5, you can go up and see that building, which is a lovely historical building in our town. And I don't know how to pronounce this, Centro Centos Infantil at the Mendenhall Public Library from 5:30 to 6. Historic walking tours. The City Museum is also doing these. This is a really nice thing to do with both the Wickersham House and the city walking tours are nice things to do when you have visitors in town. Or you want to get them out of your house?
That never happens.
Never.
What are you talking about?
We only invite the nice people here. Glacier Astronaut Humor is at the Planetarium on Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m.
Where would that, else would that be?
Christina De La Rosa looks at the
science
of astronomical exploration with comedy. Hey. And it's followed by The Stars Tonight. As you know, often it's cloudy here and we don't get to see The Stars Tonight. So.
Or it's just too light and you can't outwait.
Exactly. On Wednesday, there's Good Grief Walks at Twin Lakes. This is hospice and home care. All welcome. All the community is welcome. And it's free of charge. We have an English class at the Mendenhall Public Library. It's free. And it's offered through the Learning Connection out at the Mendenhall Public Library. 6:30 to 8, Blue Ticket, Ferries Out of Alaska by Maureen Longworth.
Yeah,
it'll be on Wednesday. And then at 8 p.m. there's Ultimate Frisbee. So we have a few things going on, and I hope to see you at most of them.
That sounds great.
Yeah. How are things been?
Okay. Things are busy and hopping, and it's sunny after, you know, a little week of on and off rain, so.
Yeah, and it's not miserably hot like some of the places we could mention.
Yeah, actually, it's been a little chilly this June.
Yeah, it's been a chilly June. So, yeah, actually, the produce folks said things are a little behind, so they're not sure exactly what they're bringing, but they're bringing in freshly grown produce from here.
I am growing tomatoes in my kitchen. I'm very excited about big ones. Yeah. So they're green.
Cool. Yeah.
They're green, but they're growing, and I'm very proud of them.
You'll have some eventually.
All right. So thanks, Nancy.
See you Friday night.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, here we go. We are wrapping up the show. You've been listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We are live, and we are local, and this is a live show. Jeff Brown makes it all happen. He is the producer and engineer, and I'm Joan Partis, your talking head. We've had a really great show, Jeff. Thanks for putting together all those people, getting them through, and finding out so much what's going on with our community as far as weather. We're still looking at, sorry, it says scattered rain showers, maybe in the valley. Downtown, it's gorgeous. Highs around 60. Tonight, partly cloudy, patchy fog, low in the mid-40s. I don't believe it. Tomorrow, sunny. Highs in the mid-60s. Highs around 70s in the Mendenhall Valley. And then Friday night, partly cloudy. Saturday, chance of rain, high in the mid-60s. And tomorrow, in decline. Juno Afternoon. Always a party. Great way to wrap up your week. And you can listen to Juno Afternoon anytime you want on demand at ktoo.org. Thanks for listening.